and welcome to Radio Reading Services' presentation of the Cincinnati Enquirer's comic section. This is your host, Bob Wiley, speaking. We're going to start the day off with Garfield. Well, Garfield is sitting watching television, and the story is going to be about what would Lassie, the show Lassie, have been like if Lassie had been a cat. So as Garfield's sitting here watching the TV is starting to go, meow, 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 meow. And the voice goes, what's that, Fluffy? You say Timmy fell down a well and needs our help? Meow, meow. Oh, where's the well, Fluffy? Show me the way, show me the way. Purr. No, no, I don't have any liver treats. Now, come on now. Timmy needs us. Oh, squeak, 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 squeak. Oh, there's no time for the squeaky mouse, you stupid cat. Yuck, yuck, hack. Up comes, ick, a hairball in my slipper. Oh, purr. Garfield smiles and looks over at us and says, you know, I hope Timmy packed a lunch. Mutts by Patrick MacDonald. Well, Earl is out in the backyard. It's a beautiful, shiny day, clear skies for a change. And sun's shining, grass is growing. He's got his little kiddie pool set out there, and he's set up in it all up on one side. And he's taken up about maybe a little less than a third of the pool. And Mooch the cat walks up, and Pearl looks over and says, hey, Mooch, why don't you join me? Come on in. And Mooch says, okay. And then he turns around and walks away. But he comes back in the next panel, and he's carrying something over his head. Looks like a kind of a kiddie pool, but not quite. And he plops it down into Earl's kiddie pool. It is a huge swan with a kiddie pool in the back of the swan. The swan has taken up 95% of Earl's kiddie pool. Earl is squeezed up against one corner by this gigantic swan, and guess who is lounging comfortably in the back of the swan? Of course, it's Mooch. Join me or take over. How about Red and Rover by Brian Bassett? Well, the scene opens up with Red and Rover in the backyard. Red has a beautiful climbing tree in the backyard, and he has climbed up this tree. He's gone way out in one limb, nice strong limb, and he's hooked his legs over the limb. He's hanging down, arms folded across his chest, relying purely on his legs to keep him from falling down. And his friend Rover comes running up to him and sits down and looks, and Red turns around and says, Rover, Rover, looky what I can do. Rover gets this look on his face, turns around and looks at us with a kind of a look. And the final panel has Rover up in Red's face, lick, 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 licking him all over the face. And Red is screaming, yeah, and he can't get loose because he can't get his arms up to get back up on top of the limb. Get Fuzzy by Darby Conley. Well, Rob is coming into the household. He's just closed the door. He's taking his jacket off. And apparently he's had Bucky Cat with him. And as he walks in, here's Satchel Pooch, the dog, who sees him coming in. And he says, hey, Rob, how was the fair? Rob looks really disgusted and looks down at the cat and says, ask Bucky. Bucky looks and says, well, there was a misunderstanding. And Pooch and Satchel says, oh, I always thought the town fair was pretty obvious. Well, apparently, says Rob, Bucky thinks go for the juggler is an expression. Oh, says Bucky, I know I've heard it. No, you haven't, says Rob. The expression is jugular. Go for the jugular, not juggler. And so Bucky stops, looks around and says, okay, so what does that mean? Rob starts to answer, and he thinks for a moment, and he says, you know what? I'm not going to tell you that. Well, apparently, says Bucky, expression or not, I'd go for that juggler again. And I'll tell you something else. I didn't care for that clown's attitude either. Turns around, looks at Satchel. If you ever put a clown suit on, I'll take you down like a Florida congressman. Satchel's response is, Okay, fair enough. Pearls Before Swine by Stefan Pastis. A pig is lying in bed on a nice, beautiful, sunny day outside, got the covers pulled up to his chin, just minding his own business, and the world, in the shape of a globe with two arms and hands sticking out one to each side, comes up to the window. Here's the map of the world is on this globe. It is the world. And he comes up through the window and looks at a pig and says, "Hey, pig, it's me, the world. Come outside and engage with me." "No," says Pig. "People are too angry now. They're too racist, too mean. I don't know what happened to you." "Ah, come on, man," says the world. "That's harsh. I'm just going through a thing. Hey, let's be friends again." "No," says the pig. "I'm not going out till you're a happy place again." So Pig thinks, or the world thinks for a minute. He says, "Well, okay, I see. I tell you what. Can I borrow a pen to write down your concerns?" "Oh, sure," says Pig, and he hands the pen over to the world. The world turns his back on us, and we can see him scribbling. Well, we can't see what he's scribbling, but the pen is aimed back at himself. Scribble, scribble, scribble. He turns back around. Ta-da! He's got a great big smiley face, two dots of eyes, and a great big happy mouth. He has just scribbled on his face. Ta-da! Pig reaches over, pulls the curtains closed, locking the world out. You hear the world on the other side. "You're hard to impress." Pig is just saying, "I hope this was just a nightmare." Marmaduke by Brad and Paul Anderson. Well, little Barbara Winslow is getting ready to go in the car with her dad. She's got a little sack with her. It looks like it could be a lunch basket. Not sure what it is. It's just a nice bag she's carrying. And Marmaduke comes running up. And she stops. She turns around and tells him to sit down. And she says, "Marmaduke, you can't just hang your head out the window. It's not safe." And she reaches in her sack. She pulls out a pair of socks. And she says, "This will keep the dirt out of your ears." And she pulls the socks over Marmaduke's big ears. And then she reaches in her bag, pulls out a pair of goggles. "No bugs in your eyes," she says, as she fastens the goggles around his face. And he's starting to look a little concerned. And then she continues on. She pulls a red scarf out. "And this, nothing up your nose," as she wraps the scarf all the way around his nose, cutting it off from the outside. "Or your mouth," and she comes up with a blue scarf and ties it over his mouth. Now here's the dog, socks in his head, on his ears, goggles in his eyes, one scarf around his nose, another scarf around his. He is totally mummified from the shoulders up. And about this time, Dad Phil walks out. He got the car keys in his hand. He says, "Hey, you guys ready to go to the store?" Marmaduke takes one turn around, sees a squirrel, and he is off. He just doesn't want to be seen with all this in his face. And Barbara says, "Well, he's so easily distracted." Well, in the Doggone Funny article at the end of each Marmaduke, this one comes from La Mirada, California. Rita Rutkowski has Max, a chihuahua, who wakes up Rita by kissing her until she wakes up and gets out of bed. But once she does, Max burrows under the covers right where she was and goes right back to sleep. You see, Max likes his blankets warm. Peanuts. Well, this one is going to be, and by Schultz, this one's going to be about Woodstock mostly, with Snoopy in there. Little Woodstock is flying through the air, little yellow bird, except he's flying in his sleep. He's wiggling and wobbling all over the air, just flying through. And as he flies along, here's Snoopy up on the top of his doghouse, laying down on his back, looking straight up, and Woodstock flies directly into Snoopy's nose. Bonk! Does a flip, lands on Snoopy's stomach, crawls back up to the tip of his nose, and continues sleeping. He never woke up. So he's sitting up on top of Snoopy's nose. He's sleeping. Snoopy's sleeping. You see the Z's coming out, and he gets a little unbalanced, and Woodstock falls off, lands in his head right next to Snoopy's head at the top of the doghouse. Clunk. Snoopy doesn't wake up. Woodstock sits up, continues to sleep. He's sitting up, leaning back up against Snoopy, and he falls off again down to the food bowl, the water bowl, down to the ground. Clunk! Snoopy hasn't waked up. Woodstock goes back to sleep again. Clunk! He falls off the bowl right into the ground directly in front of Snoopy's doghouse door. Sound asleep. And all of a sudden, you hear this clunk, 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 which does wake Snoopy up. Snoopy spins around, looks down the way, and he looks as, oh my gosh, all the way into the basement. Agnes by Tony Cochran. Well, it's Sunday. Church is over with. The priest is outside the church, and or the preacher. What it does? It's non-denominational. It's not clear. He's just got priestly robes on, or pastor robes on, whatever, however you want to define it. And he's talking to Agnes outside the church, and he says, "Agnes, are you enjoying your summer so far?" And Agnes says, "Well, as much as is still available to me." She says, "You know, after all the chores are finished and all the time spent on required hygiene and, of course, all of the mandated moral constraints of my ancient religion, I don't have much time to do much, and what I can do is just, well, not a lot of fun." Walks away, and Grandma's been watching this. She walks up and catches Agnes, says, "Okay, Agnes, so which of these ancient religion moral constraints are you the most upset about?" Agnes sticks her nose up and starts to walk away, and she said, "Well, first up would be avarice, because it sounds the most fun." Avarice. Dennis the Menace by Hank Ketchum. Well, Mr. Wilson is outside reading the paper with his little summer hat on, and Martha is setting up some lemonade on the table outside for them to have and enjoy outdoors, and as Mr. Wilson is reading the newspaper, he's speaking to his wife, and he says here that kids are playing too many video games or they're glued to their phones. He gets a little angry, not even talking on them, just staring at them. He starts walking around pontificating. He says, "What happened to playing together, to socializing, to exercising?" And he walks up to Martha. She hands him a lemonade, and he says, "This technology is keeping kids busy with a false sense of reality." And about this time, Dennis walks up to the side of the fence on the other side of the yard from where Mr. Wilson is. Says, "Hey, Mr. Wilson, you have time to play a game?" Mr. Wilson turns around and says, sure. Have you ever been to an arcade?" "Oh, what?" says Dennis. Nancy by Olivia James. Well, Nancy is in an exercise center with her friend Sluggo, and she's looking around the room, and she's telling Sluggo, "You know, this rec center that Aunt Fritzy brought us to is nice, but, you know, I don't want anybody to try to make me move or exercise, so fortunately, I brought this surge protector with me." And she pulls out this surge protector with five different outlets on it, a little switch and a plug that goes into the wall or to an extension cord. And she sets her backpack down, puts the surge protector in there. It's not plugged into anything in the wall. It's just plugged into the backpack, which has nothing in it. But she plugs her phone into it, into the surge protector, and she turns to Sluggo. She says, "You know, if I pretend I'm using it to charge my phone, well, nobody will give me a hard time for just sitting around on the floor. Yep, this is a surefire way to keep those trainers and youth counselors away." And before she can finish the sentence, two people have already walked over there, sat down next to her with their phones and iPods all plugged into it, all sitting down, charging into this unplugged outlet. And they're sitting down on the floor just waiting till their devices charge up. Hi and Lois by Brian and Greg Walker. Well, Mom, Lois, has taken little Trixie out for a walk in her stroller. And she's pushing her down the street, and one of the neighbors comes running by, looks down and says, "Hello, Trixie," and keeps on jogging by. And then they get down the street a little bit further on. And here's Mr. Waverly, a neighbor who's sitting in his wheelchair outside the VFW. He's wearing his VFW cap. He looks down as they go by, and he focuses on Trixie and says, "How's little Trixie today?" Trixie looks back and smiles. They go a little further down the sidewalk, and here's two people walking up the sidewalk in the opposite direction, and they look down and says, "Look, it's Trixie." And the other one says, "Yeah, hi, Trixie." And Trixie smiles back. Oh, she's enjoying this. A little boy goes by, a little red-headed boy with curly hair wearing a bike helmet. He goes riding by and looks down. "How's it going, Trixie?" And she smiles. She turns around and kind of looks up toward her mother, and she's thinking to herself, "How do all these people know my name?" And then she turns around. She gets a real smug smile on her face, and she says, "I must be famous." Baby Blues by Rick Kirkman and Jerry Scott. Mom Wanda and Dad Daryl are in bed trying to get some sleep. It's late at night. And you hear this, "Ow, give it back. No, 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 just a second. Ow, quit that. Stop that." All coming out from down the hall. Daryl rolls over, looks at his wife, and he says, "Somebody should go check on the kids." She opens one eye and looks over his shoulder, and she says, You mean the kids that you so enthusiastically helped create? You know, the ones for whom I endured 3 pregnancies, gave up my career, and now devote my life to managing?" She turns around and stares him straight in the face. "You mean those kids?" He is shrinking down from this verbal attack. And the final panel has him in the kitchen with the 3 kids. And Hammy looks up and says, "Why aren't you still in bed?" Daryl comes back. "There wasn't enough room for me and all the guilt." Jump Start, starring Joe and Marcy. Well, little Sunny comes running into the living room where her dad, Joe, and her mom, Marcy, are kind of cuddling on the couch. Nothing romantic, just enjoying each other. And she comes running up with her phone. She says, "Good news, Mom and Dad. I sold so many seed packets, I saved the endangered Java rhinoceros." And she shows him the phone, and here's a picture of the rhinoceros on the phone. And Marcy turns to Joe, and she says, "And here we are, thinking this is just a lazy Sunday at the Cobb residence." Well, Sunny's still going on. She says, "You remember Junior, the endangered rhinoceros?" Says Joe. He's trying to think what to say, and she continues on. "Well, he lives in the Ujung Kulon." Oh, yeah, right, of course," says Marcy. Well, Sonny says, "Well, the money I raised from selling seed packets was used to find him a mate from China. And here's the most exciting part. Junior is about to become a dad." She raises both arms up in the air. And Mom and Dad look at each other and grab their little daughter and say, "Great work, Sonny." And the final panel has Marcy at work the next day talking to her boss, Dana. And she's saying, "What did you do in Indonesia, Dana?" Dana comes back, "I told you, I own a coffee factory there." Different Sides of Life. And Fraz by Jeff Mallon. Well, a little girl is running up to Fraz, and she's got her hands over the top of her head, holding onto her head, exclaiming, "Ah! Turns out it's cottage cheese. And all my life," she says, "I thought I was eating college cheese." And then she looks up at him and she says, "Well, but that's the good thing about being a kid. You know, you can make a mistake all of your life, and it's only a 7 or 8 year mistake." And Fraz turns around knowingly and says, "You know, and calling cottage cheese to be college cheese is really a pretty mild mistake." The little girl continues on. She says, "Well, I mean, eating it for that many years, thinking it would help me get into a good university." "Oh," says Fraz, "there are schools that will overlook much worse." Zits by Jerry Scott and Jim Borgman. Well, Jeremy is looking at a TV screen. And the TV screen has got a label on it. It's a 4K Ultra HD 2160p. Then he's getting down, sitting on the floor, typing on his laptop. And the laptop's labeled, stunning LED 8 million pixel backlit display. And then he picks up his phone, which has got a label, quad HD display and a 12 megapixel camera. All these in beautiful color images for each panel that we're looking at. And then he goes, looks in the living room, and here's his mom and dad sitting over on a table with a dice game between them. They're all in black and white. He's sitting over the side, still holding his phone. He's in color. They are in black and white. And mom is yelling, Yahtzee! And the final panel has Jeremy talking to his friend Pierce. And he says, my family life needs a major update. Pierce comes back, well, don't they all? For Better or For Worse by Lynn Johnston. Well, we're in the family bedroom. John and Ellie are there, and Ellie's been doing some rearranging. She's got the counter for the dresser all cleaned up, and down on one end, she's looking at John, and she's saying, John, I moved your watch, your wallet, your keys to your end of the dresser. And there's some photos down there, and she says, He comes back at her, he says, I didn't know there was a your end and a my end. Well, of course there is, says Ellie. Your end has the photographs on it, and mine has the jewelry box. All of your stuff goes on your end, and all of my stuff goes on my end. Oh, says John. He walks out, comes back with a big pile of papers, throws them on top of the dresser, and she looks at her and says, what are you doing? He looks at her, turns around and walks out saying, putting the bills in the middle. Gotcha. The Middletons by Ralph Dunnigan and Dana Summers. Well, Morris is walking out of the Middleton Mall with his mother, Grandma B, and he is saying, I have never been so embarrassed. She grins and she says, well, then my work is done here. And they walk into where Midge is coming up from the outside, and he's telling her all that's going on. He tells his wife, that's the last time I go to the mall with her. Grandma B is still smiling, and Midge says, well, why? And he says, she spent the whole time whistling at men, catcalling and carrying on. And he looks his mother right straight in the eyes. He says, you need new glasses. I do not, says B. She's angry. And he looked at her knowingly and says, well, then, explain all the mannequins that you came on to. Beetle Bailey by Mort Walker. Well, they're in the barracks, and Rocky is getting out of bed, except he's having a little trouble getting out. As he starts to move, his back is cracking, and he goes, ouch, there goes my back. He's struggling to get up out of the rack. Finally, gets dressed in his fatigues, goes outside, and believe it or not, Beetle is already outside. He's dressed. He's even got a smile on his face. He's having a good day. He walks up to Rocky. How you doing, Rocky? Rocky turns around with a grimace, says, not so good. And he stooped over and he's holding his back. He says, I woke up with a backache, and he grabs his leg, and I had a leg cramp. It's still bugging me. And then he looks, he says, you know, and I bit my tongue at breakfast. He says, I slipped on a wet spot in the mess hall, and I hurt my wrist. He's grabbing that, and now I'm developing a headache. Beetle's listening to all this, and he finally turns to him. He says, you know, most people just say, fine. Rocky says, if I was, I would have. Moral, don't ask somebody how they feel. They just might tell you. Blondie by Dean Young and John Marshall. Well, Dagwood gets a phone call, or gets the doorbell is rung, and he walks to the door, and there's a delivery man outside who's holding a package, and he's pointing to Dagwood's pocket, and he says, you know, a few minutes ago, I asked you to sign for an envelope, and you forgot to give me back my pen. And Dagwood says, oh, I'm sorry. I guess I put it in my pocket by mistake. So he takes it out, gives it to him, says, "Here you go." The guy says, "Thanks," grabs the pen, turns around and walks away. Dagwood goes back inside the house, sits down in his easy chair. No sooner has he sat down and started watching TV again, we hear another ding-dong, knock-knock-knock, ding-dong. So Dagwood gets out of the chair. He walks back to the front door, and there is the same delivery man. He's saying, "You know, I forgot to give you your envelope." "Oh, okay," says Dagwood. "No problem." So he closes the door, goes back inside. Delivery man walks away, and as Dagwood's walking back into the living room, he stops, looks at the envelope, and he says, "Hey, wait a minute. This envelope is for the Parkers across the street." The delivery man is already out of sight. Dagwood, you'll get to do his work for him. Now, let's look at Dilbert by Scott Adams. Dilbert is in a meeting with a pointy-haired boss. And the pointy-haired boss is telling him, "I can't give you a raise because you did not complete your project." Dilbert comes back and says, "Well, that's because you canceled my project for budget reasons, and then you assigned me to work on another project." And the pointy-haired boss says, "Well, did you finish your new project?" And Dilbert comes back, "Wait a minute, you just now assigned it to me. I haven't had it 2 days yet." "Well," says the pointy-haired boss, "apparently I keep giving you work, but you never complete any of it." Dilbert's now getting angry. He throws both arms up in the air and waving them and says, "This is a total distortion of what happened." And the pointy-haired boss is still moving on. "I can't reward you for having good intentions and finishing nothing." So Dilbert makes one more try. He says, "Well, hey, why not wait and see how I do on my current project?" Pointy-haired boss says, "Oh, we don't need that anymore." We're out of time, so this concludes our reading of the comic section of the Cincinnati Enquirer. We'll be back next week at the same time, so tune in then. But for now, this is Bob Wiley saying farewell and wishing you all a day full of happiness and, of course, laughs.